If you've been thinking about getting serious with your money, like actually serious, now's the time. The Motley Fool is offering new members 50% off their iconic stock recommendation service, Stock Advisor. This is the same service that's crushed the market with recommendations that have returned 1,057% since inception, compared to the S&P 500's 180% over that same period. This isn't guesswork. The Motley Fool has a track record of finding companies before they become household names. So if you want to invest smarter and you like saving money while doing it, go to fool.com/listen to claim your 50% off discount off a one-year term of Stock Advisor. Again, that's fool.com/listen. Returns of 1,057% are from the Motley Fool's product Stock Advisor and measured against S&P 500 returns of 180% as of July 10th, 2025. Past performance is not an indicator of future results. All investing involves a risk of loss. Individual investment results may vary.
This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 359 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
This week, we'd like to thank co-producer Megan P. And if you're like, what's a co-producer? Well, we will explain toward the end of the show. We'll tell you a little bit more about what co-producers are, how to become one, and what that's all about. We also still have some spots for our 2021 Pod Abroad trip. If you'd like more information about that, you can go to podabroad.com.
And now, on to our read-along. This week, we will be continuing our A Breath of Snow and Ashes read-along, beginning with, not just beginning, we're going to start part four, entitled Abduction. And you know, I feel like going into this reading this week, that should have been something that jogged in my memory of the bad things that are going to happen. And I'm like, abduction, whatever, because, you know, bad stuff happens all the time in these books. But we'll be beginning part four, Abduction, with chapter 26, entitled An Eye to the Future.
So as I like to do, I don't think I started in book one, but somewhere along, I think, book four or five in our read-alongs, I started doing this because it definitely happens very rarely in the show, and it's much more frequent in the books, but still, it's not every chapter, so I like to grab onto these things. And that is, we have a date. So the date we're given in chapter 26 is October 9th, 1773.
It's very specific.
Very specific, exactly.
Do you feel like this happens a lot in these books? At least in the last two books. I feel like...
You just skip time?
No, it's not that you skip time. It's that Roger comes home, finds Bree there by herself, and is wanting to know where Jem is. The last time he went off with Jamie, the same thing happened. He came back, wanted to know where Jem is. They talked about the horrible burning of the house, and then they went and walked to the people to go pick Jem up. He comes home from another horrific scene at a cabin. Jem is not there. And there's a conversation of where Jem is.
It happens more than once. But I think because both of them are in this book and pretty recent, I think that's why it stands out to you. But I'm not saying it's not a thing, because apparently it's borderline a thing, if not a thing.
Does she ever have Jem at home by herself, though?
Are you trying to mom shame Bree?
I'm not mom shaming Bree. I'm saying she values her private time.
Oh, so you're praising her.
I'm just saying. She finds a way to put her kids someplace else every time he leaves.
That's funny. So as Summer said, the dudes, Jamie and Roger, have returned from their trip to the Snowbird Village, and as well as the burying of the O'Briens. So in other words, the goblins are back. As Summer said, Jem's nowhere to be found. He's at Marsali's. He tells her what happened on the trip. Quote, and the memory of the girl who had left her heart in his hand was suddenly as real as she had been in the moment she died, unquote. What a beautiful metaphor. Now, Roger is very touched and deeply affected by this experience. Quote, it had been the most vivid experience of his life, unquote. As he's able to relax into his breathing, he asks about what she's digging. So she's outside digging. And she's like, oh, it's going to be a groundhog kiln for the water. She got the idea from a choir in Salem. Now, in relaying the story about how she started to dig, making clay pipes, she mentions Marsali. And then, side note, Fergus isn't behaving very well. He's gone off. He's gone a lot and leaves her, Marsali, to do most of the work. And when he is home, quote, he's grumpy and drinks too much, unquote. So Bree is worried that Fergus is getting a little too domestic on Marsali. She'd seen marks on her arms. And so Roger offers to speak with Fergus. But she's like, I don't know yet. I don't know. They go to the big house for dinner, but first detour to see the ditch she's digging. He offers to finish it. He offers to finish it so she can do other tasks. She's got all kinds of ideas. Maybe in the future they could run the heat of the kiln to underneath the cabin. And they're off to the big house.
And that was the very brief chapter 26.
It was.
And then this chapter happens. We're going to move on to chapter 27, entitled The Malting Floor, which, again, I've read this book once. So while I remember this, having read it again, I was not prepared for this to happen quite so quickly. Even though I know they pulled it forward in season 5, I was not adequately prepared for this chapter, and I kind of hate Reddit. I didn't want to read it. I don't like it.
You rage read it.
Yeah.
So I was telling Summer before we got on that I knew what happened in this chapter because, well, first of all, this part is called Abduction. No surprise there. And the title, The Malting Floor, means something to me because I've associated it with this chapter. But I thought, and I guess it would make sense because not everything, and this is no spoiler because by the end of the chapter, we know we're no longer near the whiskey shed, right? So that's not a spoiler. But I thought that all the stuff from the beginning to the end of this sequence of what's about to happen over the next few weeks on our show was all in this chapter. And I was ready for it to be like a heck of a long chapter. It is pretty long. It's 27 pages. However, it is not the entire sequence.
I wish it had been done in one chapter. I wish it had been done. I don't want this to keep going. I hate this storyline.
The good news is it only lasts a few chapters. She does not draw it out too long, which is good, I guess.
Really? It's not too long, but each chapter is almost 30 pages. So that's 30 pages. That's 100 pages of horrible.
So without giving, because this would be a spoiler, a major spoiler, a huge spoiler, without giving a spoiler, do you know what happens? Just a simple yes or no. That's all I'm asking from you, Sam. Do you know what happens when I mention, I don't know the number, but when I mention the chapter called Among the Lettuces, does that have a strike a memory with for you?
No, I don't remember chapter names, weirdo.
Normally, I don't. But the malting floor, it's seared in my brain. It's where they're attacked and she's abducted. Like, I know what happens. Okay. So the reason I asked about the other chapter name, I don't know the number, was because that's seared in my mind. And listeners who do know, you know what I know what I know. You know what you know. So two chapters. And I'm sure there's more. I'm sure there are more, a few in each book. But definitely in, like I said, book 6 is up there, one of my favorites. Those two chapter titles, at least, are seared into my mind as far as what happens in them. So obviously, we know what's going to happen here. Summer, I will take it out. Do you want me to tell you what happens in Among the Lettuces? I'll take it out.
No, I'm going to read it. You're going to make me read it.
I'm going to make you read it? Okay, first of all, shut the front door. You're part of this. I make you do nothing.
Yeah, uh-huh. So I'd forgotten. It's like I knew stuff happens on the malting floor. Yeah. So I'm like, I kind of knew what it was happening, but because there are several scenes in my brain, I remembered them having multiple scenes take place or chapters, not scenes, chapters take place with the malting house. Like there was more than one malting house incident in my brain. So I did not anticipate that the first time we spend time in the malting house was the time. So, and like I said, even though I know they brought it forward, I didn't expect to have to read this so quickly after starting the read along. And this is why this chapter, I believe, is why Marsali is as big of a badass as she is in the show.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
Because she takes an axe to the people. Come on. That was badass.
So we are in first person. We realize immediately that we must be with Claire. So Claire's on her way to the malting shed where the whiskey is made. She shows up expecting to see Marsali turning and spreading the grain before the fire was lit. And she was. Diana educates us a bit on this part of the whiskey making process. She describes it and kind of the steps and like at which point this happens and how long you have to turn. But if you wait too long, then it starts to sprout. It's no longer good. So she gives us a good little education here about this part of the whiskey making process. So Bree had spoken with Claire about Fergus's potential mistreatment of Marsali. And Claire planned to have a chat. To have that chat now.
They were defensive wounds. They were defensive wounds. That's my favorite part. The bruise she has is from him defending himself.
On the way there, Germain falls from a tree and nearly crashes into Claire. He'd been gathering bird's eggs for his mom. I know. He knows his mom is there in the shed. And Germain says his sisters are home, his grand-mère, they're talking, and she's like, oh, well, where are the girls? And they're at home. Claire goes into the shed, startling Marsali. And Germain gives her the eggs in the nest, which he had stolen. And they go outside to look at them. Marsali is only in her shift because it gets really hot in there. Germain counts the eggs, assigning each one. And he's like, this is for mom, this is for père, this is for papa, this is for maman, this is for Joni, all the people, all the kids. And this is for, and this one, quote, and one for Monsieur Leuf, unquote. And that's her and Fergus's name for babies before they're born. Because it's not just this one, it's all of them, we learn. All of them were Monsieur Leuf before they're born. And she goes to help. She tells him to go help.
You said she goes to help.
And milk their newish goat.
I don't remember that part.
Oh, no. So Germain leaves, and he leaves the nest with the eggs there, or they're on the ground. Then Claire sees the faded bruises, and she asks about Fergus. And thankfully, she gets to the point. Marsali says that he grabbed her arm because she was trying to brain him with a stick of wood.
Exactly. Defensive wounds.
She had been wanting to do that because he'd overreacted to wee Joni when she spilled the milk and he shouted at her. He'd milked the goat, and we all know Fergus has got one hand, so whatever he does like this, number one, he's happy when he can contribute to the family in these, you know, literal ways. But now this milk had like got like it, all his work and the goat's work, like it was wasted. Like you can't, you know, this is not where you can go down to the store and get another pint of milk. Claire remembers a time with young Bree and Frank. Bree had dumped spaghetti and meatballs into Frank's briefcase, and he had bellowed at her. So Claire understood what it was to be livid at a child of something that obviously is technically the child's fault in that the child did the thing. I doubt Joni meant to spill her milk. I do think Bree meant to dump spaghetti and meatballs, but it wasn't to be rude. It was just, kids, young humans don't have a lot of motor control and they're not very graceful. Let's just put it that way. But the point is, Claire remembers.
Oh, you know what, though? You can't explain. Come on. Lack of motor controls does not explain dumping a plate of spaghetti and meatballs into a briefcase.
That's what I said.
Okay, because I'm like, wait a minute.
That's what I'm saying. Because unless he left his briefcase on the floor, or maybe actually on the table, then if something is knocked over, I can see it gets knocked over. But Diana writes, she dumped it, which means it has to be kind of like almost purposefully done. So we don't get an age, but it's a young Bree. It could have been, you know, toddlerish.
Well, if she'd said dropped it, it could have been an accident. But dumped it is definitely on purpose. Now, I don't think she was doing it maliciously. You know, I'm sure maybe she thought that she was giving her dad a meal to take with him to the office.
Dad, here's your packed lunch.
You know what I mean? Here's lunch to go. Oh, no. You know? So I'm making sure you have food when you go to work tomorrow.
But mostly Claire remembers this scene. And so she's basically able to, first of all, she's a mom. She's been there and done that with her child of all through all the ages, all the developmental phases. And she understands the reaction. We don't know if Claire's ever had that reaction because we don't get that example. The only example we get is Frank's being upset. So maybe the common thread here is not a parent's reaction, but a dad's reaction, right? Because we have Fergus yelling or trying to, he overreacted. What did she say? He shouted at her. So he had shouted at Joni. And so Frank had, so it's kind of like it's an analogous scene, right? Bree had done something to ruin something of Frank's or to set him back time-wise or to whatever, to definitely it was inconvenienced him, right? And Frank had bellowed. So it was two fathers who had yelled, bellowed, however you want to put it, at their young children. So Claire understands that feeling. Marsali says that she'd also spilled the milk when she was a child. And someone, a man, had yelled. So it's not just that Marsali is sensitive to her child being yelled at. Okay, I think that could be universal.
It was PTSD, man.
It was complete PTSD. So she, when she was young, had spilled a jug, we don't know. She had spilled some milk and some man in her presence there, had yelled. Now, Leary, of course, Marsali's mom, Leary had cried, but the man had shouted and slapped her face. And then Leary, quote, went for him bald-headed, and he pushed her, so she fell against the hearth and smacked her face on the chimney. I could see blood running from her nose, unquote. It's times like this that I really think of all the hardships that Leary had, because
She's not a sympathetic character.
Mostly, yes, correct.
She's not been written that way. So, and I feel a lot like Claire in that I really hate that they're trying to make me care. And I feel the same way about Summer. This chapter. I'm like,
you don't want to hear it.
It's just like the show trying to make me like Frank. I don't like Frank.
See, I never hated Frank.
I don't
Frank.
Want to.
I
just stop trying to make me like him.
I never
him.
Hated Frank, but I will be all over Tobias anytime. So that's unfortunately the way that went. But as a matter of fact, no one knows this. It's a little uncomfortable watching The Crown because I know they dolled him up to make him look a little older, but I don't see BJR in him. I don't, obviously. I just see Tobias, and it's like, I don't care what he's in. He's still Tobias. Okay. Yes. So she had a PTSD moment. Flash.
Yeah. She did the thing she wished someone had done for her.
Marsali says it was a flashback to that scene in her mind, and she sorely misses her mom. Claire tells her that she'll finish the malting floor and Marsali should go rest a bit. Then Claire gets her kid off. She planned to finish here and then go home.
And none of Claire's plans actually happen.
So she planned to finish here and then go home with her to make them all dinner and maybe then speak with Fergus. So it's nearing, we don't get the word. We get all kinds of hints, but we don't get the word twilight. It's nearing to sundown. There are all kinds of hints all over the text.
I mean, it's close to dinner time.
Yeah. So right? She's thinking over all Marsali told her, quote, and this is what Summer was hinting at or not so hinting at, quote, I didn't want to like Leary. But I didn't want to feel sympathy for her either.
Exactly.
Unquote.
Like, That's my point. I don't want any more insight into this character. Sometimes I just need black and white items in my life. Things that I'm supposed to hate, things that I'm supposed to love. And I like to keep them separate, and I like them to not be nuanced, and I don't want to like her.
Claire will always be sensitive to the topic of Leary. Always.
You think?
The mention of her name conjured up assorted visions, starting with Jamie kissing her ardently in an alcove at Castle Leek, and ending with him fumbling up her nightgown in the darkness of their marriage bed. That made me snort like a grampus and feel the blood throb hotly in my temples. Unquote. She hears the sound of voices outside. Oh, goodness.
That's never a good sign.
No. She couldn't see faces, nor could she tell how many they were. Marsali was out there with them, asking who they were. And they say they're, quote, thirsty travelers. Okay. The voices weren't nice. Mm-hmm. Claire makes herself visible and tells Marsali to go get their keg. To one of the voices, Claire thinks, quote, the voice was English and oddly familiar, not a cultivated accent, but with a careful diction, unquote. She knew where an axe lay and went to help Marsali and to get it. She also recognized one of the men who'd come out. Then one of them calls her by name, Mrs. Fraser. One man takes the keg, another the axe. They ask where the rest of the whiskey is. See for yourself, they say, that's all there is. And then the supposed leader slaps her across the face. This sentence makes me think this might be where her, this might be where her dissociation begins. Quote, I put the back of my hand to my bleeding mouth, noticing in a detached sort of way that I was trembling. My brain, though, had withdrawn to a safe distance and was making and discarding suppositions so quickly that they fluttered past, fast as shuffling cards. Unquote. I think that's a lot of evidence right there that she's beginning. It's beginning. Claire believes that these were the men who'd burned down the O'Brien's home, maybe even responsible for attacks inside the treaty line. She decides to give them more whiskey, but she didn't have a chance to do so. She was grabbed, and then they went toward Marsali, who axed one of the men.
Let me ask you a question. I feel like we, in the books, Marsali is an implied badass just because, you know, of all the things she does. She's basically taking care of all of the kids while also taking care of the entire homestead and doing all the things. So that in and of itself is badass. But I feel like the Marsali that we saw in the TV series, I feel like was grown from this chapter. Because in this chapter, she goes like badass. Because she like, who thinks of that? Like, she immediately like buries an axe in a dude's shoulder.
Yeah.
Go.
Yeah. It's a lot of action in this chapter. At this point there, because who knows what the future will bring.
I think we know what the future will bring.
Yeah, we're not going there. They're definitely outnumbered. And it's not only like, who knows, 10, 15, 16 to 2. We don't know. It's definitely outnumbered. And all the people who outnumber them are dudes. So they're already stronger, already whatever, right? They're fighting for their lives. They're fighting because they're out here alone. And she fights with things that she can. She grabs a clay fire pot. She uses her hands. She uses her head. I believe she headbutts one of them. She sees Marsali slumped against the shed, shift ripped open. And then Claire is hit on the head and she falls. But before she passes out, she sees the nest and the eggs, the ones that Germain had gotten from the tree, and they had been crushed there on the ground.
We totally skipped over the thing that I was wanting to talk about, which is Germain's little song. He's like got this little sing-songy song, and I assumed it was French, just like Claire kind of assumed it was French. And then when she asks him, the song he sings is Don't Fall. Don't fall, Germain. Don't fall. How often do you think people tell him that he's created a song out of it? And he sings it after he just fell out of a tree.
That's a little foreshadowing, isn't it? For like two books ahead.
Ew, stop it. I hate you. And I hate that scene. I don't want to talk
about it.
Talking
about it. I don't know what you mean.
Anyway,
I don't know
Claire's
what you mean.
Claire's been brained.
What? Well, okay, not really brained, but hit on the head. Yes.
Claire's been brained. She's gone out, passed out. And of course, like always, she wakes up and she only is thinking about other people.
When she comes to, she smells burning. The malting shed has been set on fire. And Claire is dragged up and thrown across the saddle of a horse. Now, one of the men says that Hodge, and she's like, is this the leader or is that the leader? One of the men says that Hodge is crazy and he doesn't want that woman. It's meaning you don't want that woman. You don't mess with her. It's Jamie Fraser's wife. He doesn't care.
This ends poorly for everyone if we take her.
Claire is still in her shift and it's early autumn and she's getting cold. She thinks of Marsali, the baby, when a search might start and when they might eventually find her. The men in the posse, I guess, split into two groups. They're to meet each other in Brownsville in 3 days' time. So without even knowing who's in the group, that's a little shifty shady right there.
So here's the question. Okay, we're all going to meet up in Brownsville. Then you know that they have something to do. The Browns are related to this in some way, shape, or form. Realistically, how quickly do you think they're going to notice that Marsali hasn't come home from the malting shed? Like, because that's where the tracking of Claire begins. Claire, no one's going to notice Claire's absence, really, because she could be off doing doctory things literally anywhere. So no one's going to notice her gone for a while. And plus, she was in her brain planning to go to Marsley's and cook dinner and clean up and have a...
That's it. So if she were planning on going to Marsley's to help cook them dinner, who knows if she would have even gone home that night, right? Whatever. She would have told Jamie, or at least Brianna. She would have told someone at or near the big house what she was doing, which it probably included going to the malting floor and then going to Marsali's and Fergus's house. So yes, I agree with that. So Claire would not, at the very earliest, Claire would not be missed until late that night. My guess is she wouldn't be missed till the next morning, because I don't know that she would have walked back alone in the dark.
I think that had they not lit the malting floor on fire, or the malting room on floor, then the malting house on fire, I think that would have given them more time to get away. It would have given them more time to get away. But the fact that they lit the malting, I mean, and trust me, as somebody who lives in a rural area, if you smell smoke, you're alerted, you know, especially during like for us, it's red fire season, red flag.
I never thought about that. That's true.
Which is funny how they adapted it in the series, that the thing that drew all the men away from the big house was the malting floor, or the malting house. So everyone left being blown up. So they all left to go see the malting house and figure out what was going on with that, leaving the women at home.
It's a smell and they're going to see it. And yeah, absolutely. So yeah, it's very possible the way they did it, it worked, meaning they got to where they needed to go. Okay. Would have been my first choice? No. Correct me if I'm wrong. There was no mention of Fergus being handsy with Marsali, right? Huh? That was not in the show.
Fergus is barely in the show anyway.
I know. I don't think it's a huge deal that they left that out, that doesn't bother me really. That I think bothered me, although it got to where it needed to go, so that's fine. I kind of took what you said to mean, if they're going to, now granted, they didn't have to show us. That was one less set they had to build, right? If they have it in the house, which they did, they don't have to have a set of a malting floor, right? Or malting shed. So that would save money, I would guess. But to simulate an explosion, it costs a little bit of money, maybe special effects, but probably cheaper than a set, building a set. But money aside,
I mean, let's be honest, it would have been a John Gary Steele set, which means it would have been the most amazing malting house that you've ever seen, which means it would have been expensive.
Fair enough. But I, okay, money aside though, and it could have been time, but let's not talk time in the show. I mean, it could have been just like production time, but let's talk about like screen time or time in the show, right? Was there a reason, again, money aside, were you disappointed that it wasn't in the malting shed? To me, there's a big difference between coming into someone's home and daring to do that. It was almost more ballsy, right? Because it was when they go to someone's home, they had an agenda.
Well, there was a chance that none of those people left. There was a chance that they blew that thing up and it wasn't enough of a diversion to get in and get out.
Well, that too. But
you know what I mean? It's like they could have been outnumbered by the sheer volume of people at the big house.
Yes. But what I'm saying is, regardless of how you get there or how you potentially distract people, right? You going to someone's home is a lot freaking different than you going to try and get free whiskey, even if you're going to kill someone for it. There was talk among the people in the group in the book, right? We've already had it once. You don't want her. She's a witch. We haven't gone there yet. She's dangerous. Don't touch her. Da 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 da. Right? There's that. Yes, I know we had that in the book. There was some chatter later on, but the fact that they go to the big house, the fact that they go directly to the big house on purpose means they had an agenda and it wasn't whiskey. Now I understand that the show was doing things differently. I get that. And they set it up for Claire to be Dr. Rawlings. And so there was a reason for that, right? I understand. So it's not just, why would they do that? Well, it's a lot bigger deal. Although they set it up for the reason to be different. I get that. The reason in the show was absolutely pointed toward Claire. So it makes sense why they would not need a malting floor to set that up, because at the malting floor, how can you ever be sure she's going to be there? You can't, right? So, but you can be sure, likely she's at home. So so now that I've talked myself into and out of that, I understand why they made that choice. So basically the reason they didn't use the malting floor is because it would have, number one, been more money, more time, but it also would have been one more potential unknown and not a guarantee to get your target. Whereas if you blow up something over here and you go to the home where you know she actually lives, you're going to get her.
I don't think their intention in the book was to kidnap Claire.
No, that's exactly what I'm saying.
The intention in the series, I know, I'm agreeing with you. I'm saying in the series, the intention was absolutely to kidnap Claire. They made it about the Dr. Yes. Rawlings thing. Whereas the book was people trying to steal their liquor.
Claire was a...
in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yes, but she was almost an innocent bystander, but that's not what I'm trying to say. She was a casualty of war, okay? It was not a full-fledged war. I get it. But analogically, I can't talk. Metaphorically, I guess. She was a casualty of war. They did not go there to get her, but they absolutely saw that she and Marsali, you know, once they got the one thing of liquor or whatever it was. She wasn't exactly a casualty of war. She was a target, but she wasn't a target when they got there, right? Once they realized who she was and that she would be the one to be able to take them to the whiskey house, cave, whatever, then she became a target. Like, okay, we need her, or I want her, so we can eventually get the whiskey. So we're on the same page. She, in the books, she was in no way a target. She was there, wrong place, wrong time. But once she got there and they realized that they had what treasure they had in her to get to them, to get them what they actually wanted, they were going to take her. So that, absolutely, it makes sense. It actually... yeah, I had no doubt about the book. I just had to kind of remind myself about the show that, like, why would they make her the target? Well, it was because it was set up all season, the whole Rawlings thing. So I understand. It is sad to not have the malting shore, shed, all that. But so the men, as we said, the men split into two groups. They're to meet each other in 3 days in Brownsville. So that's like, what the heck? Somehow Brownsville or someone who lives in Brownsville is involved or knows about something. So Claire was like, I don't know what I can do. I don't have, like, you know, what's that? A fairy tale? It's a Grimm's fairy tale. Hansel and Gretel. So she's like, I don't have like breadcrumbs to leave behind. Plus, obviously, breadcrumbs are not a good idea, children, because they'll be eaten by the birds. But I don't have anything to leave behind for them to follow me, to find me. And then she's like, oh my God, I got my hair. So she begins to pull her hairs out of her head to leave on bushes. So they finally stop and they're in a clearing. She's able to count about 12 men and they're arguing whether to kill her or not. So Hodge, there was an altercation in words, so it doesn't come out of the blue, but the way I'm expressing it or describing it, it sounds like it does. So we get that. Hodge cuts her across the chest. Now, in the show, when we saw this, my first thought was, what the heck? That's random. See, I do forget things. It was legit straight from the book. Like this rando, rather shallow. Yes, it had blood, but it was not deep. She was not going to like excavate her chest muscles were coming out. So she was fine.
Yeah, that was just to scare her.
Exactly.
And to make their intentions clear. Like, you know, you're not safe.
Correct. We're not joking. We mean this. One of the men says, you don't want anything to do with her. She's a conjure woman. So acting on impulse, and of course, to save her life, she dips her fingers into her own blood and then paints it onto Hodge's face and says, quote, touch me again, you die within 24 hours, unquote. This is the Claire. We don't get a lot of her. Because we only get her when she's under extreme pressure, which is not good for anyone. But this is the Claire that I dig. I can't take it. A modern woman who's like going all witchy to save her life, but in a time where people actually live it. I love it. I love this Claire. Okay. The men start to fight. She tries to get away, but she is caught. She learns that Hodge is short for Hodgepile, and he's from England. As this kind of wraps up, they get back on their horses and continue. The young man who caught her was, quote, slender with thick wild hair that hung past his shoulders and rendered him lion-maned in silhouette, unquote. Mm-hmm. Remember the mane. They stop to make camp, and Hodgepile threatens her again. She promises she's not going to run off. Now, Tebe, the man who'd wanted her released, comes up to her. He tells her, quote, remember, I was good to you. Tell your spirits they don't hurt Tebe. He was good to you, unquote.
Yeah, that was in the show.
Tebe.
And I think they called him Tebe in the show. But I enjoyed your Tebe, like Timmy from South Park.
Oh, stop it. I was not trying to do that.
Sure sounded like it. Tebe.
She was given some bread. And she used a canteen from a nearby saddle to get some water. Hodgepile ties her up and pushes her to the ground. Someone throws a blanket over her. She waits until all the men quiet down, then slowly makes her way, inchworm-like, Diana writes, to another tree. She curled up under a big hornbeam tree and tried to undo the knots in the ropes on her wrist. Hodgepile had done so with military thoroughness. Now, the thought of military sparks her memory. She knew where she'd seen him, Arvin Hodgepile. Quote, he'd been the clerk at the Crown's warehouse in Cross Creek. I had met him briefly 3 years before when Jamie and I brought the body of a murdered girl to the sergeant of the garrison there. Unquote. Otherwise known as our episode titled Dumbs of Autumn. Mm. So he was a deserter. And since he'd deserted, Claire assumes, he was, quote, wandering the countryside, stealing, robbing, and killing, and collecting a number of like-minded companions along the way, unquote. And Jamie, she believes, was surely looking for her by now.
Is this the safety committee? Are we assuming this is the safety committee?
No. Because the safety committee would have been headed by
Lionel or Richard Brown.
Richard. And if the committee of safety doesn't mean that they don't, you know, aren't capable of things. But this is like a rogue group ish, a posse, I call them, kind of a gang. And Brownsville they're definitely Brownsville adjacent, if not legit Brownsville. And we'll find out probably next chapter because I'm not going to say who's part of it. But, you know. You should know. She thinks, okay, Jamie must surely be looking for me now. She hears all kinds of noises. She thought someone was coming toward her, but the noises stopped. And she thought it was maybe because she had moved trees. So she was put down at one tree and she had made her way slowly to another tree. And it may have saved her, you know, given her some alone time for a little bit longer. And she finally sleeps.
I hate the next two chapters. I hate this chapter. I didn't like it. I don't like it. I stand by that. I don't like reading stuff like this. This is not, like, I know bad stuff happens, and it's actually, a, I mean, granted, a bad stuff happens a lot in these books because we all need conflict, right? Books need conflict. I don't like this conflict. I don't like it. I didn't like it in the first Outlander book, and I don't like it now. Not this type of conflict.
But you were okay with it in the show.
No, I hated that too. Look, I don't like it. You're not supposed to like it. I get that too, but it's just, it's harder to read it. It's harder to want to read it, I should say. Because as I'm, you know, because I have to do it. Whereas if I'm watching a show, they're just doing it. And I'm just kind of, I can passively ingest it. You know what I mean? But I have to physically make myself read this. And I don't want to. Like, that's how I feel about these chapters. I am forcing myself to read something I'm not enjoying. And I don't enjoy this type of character torture. Especially since I know where it's going. Because it's not new anymore to me. Especially since they brought it up in season 5. So because I know what's happening, I really don't want to read it. Because I know that Diana will be more graphic than the show was. And I don't want to read it. I don't want to remember it. I don't want to think about it. I don't want that to have a place to live in my head. You know what I mean?
Well, we only have a few more weeks of it and then we'll be done.
Promise. Promise. Is this why you like this book? You say this is your favorite book. Is this why?
Number 2 is my favorite because it's the saddest.
Ugh, you're so weird.
Number 6 is up there with number 2, but I think it's the next most tragic.
Because of the tragedy. Oh, you're so gross. What's wrong with you? You like tragedy porn. This is tragedy porn. This is,
come
it's
on.
Gross.
Let's wrap it up some.
I don't, you, Ginger, this is what you've just said. You like it the most because it's tragic and the tragedy, it's okay. Whatever. It's not. The chapter is over, but it doesn't mean the storyline is. We have to read this storyline for a couple more weeks.
I just said we have a few more weeks. So when we chat next time, we'll talk about it next time.
Okay. I won't like it anymore.
That's your right. I totally understand.
All right. And that, listeners, was chapter 27. Please join us next time when we will be discussing chapter 28 entitled Curses, which they kind of hinted about in the last chapter, and it looks like we're gonna have some fruition there. And if you'd like to join us to continue the conversation and maybe talk about why you hate this chapter as much as I did, you can go to www.outlanderpod.com/group.
And again, a very special thanks to co-producer Megan P. And to find out more about how you can support us on Patreon and find out what a co-producer is, you can find out more at patreon.com/outlanderpod.
And if you're interested in wearing or buying anything with art on it, you can go to our website at www.outlanderpod.com/shop.
And again, there are several spots left on our Pod Abroad tour. We would love to I can't say post-COVID because I don't think there is going to be a post-COVID.
Hey, you're right, there won't. But you know what? We're going to have vaccines. That's what it looks like. There should be a vaccine, which means we may be able to travel again soon-ish. I mean, soon is relative.
In a year. So not post-COVID because it's gone. It won't be gone. But post-conditions we have right now, like not traveling, not being able to move a lot, you know, all that stuff. Post the world the way it is right now. We have a trip coming up next September, and we'd love to invite all of you, honestly, at least for the number up until, you know, we fill up our trip, because obviously we're limited on total numbers. But yeah, we would love to be able to welcome you to join us in Scotland and to have a historical tour, an Outlander themed tour, an amazing leaving dinner on a royal yacht. No joke. What's that phrase? It'll rock your world. It will turn it inside out. It's amazing. It's amazing. But if you would like to find out more about even just looking at the itinerary, just looking at, is it something I'd even be interested in? You can find out more about the trip at podabroad.com. So thank you guys so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.